The views and opinions expressed on America's Workforce Union podcast and its digital media channels are solely those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of the producers or sponsors.
Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Well, here's a surprise. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling in favor of workers. You heard right. Daimler Truck employees in North Carolina stage a two-day rally for fair wages and better working conditions. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio Federation of Teachers and Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield's National Labor and Trust. Welcome to the Tuesday, April 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Melissa Cropper will be our first guest on the show today, longtime supporter of this show we call America's Workforce. She serves as president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. oh.aft.org is their website. Melissa also serves as secretary treasurer of the Ohio AFL-CIO. And you know there's a lot of organizing going on, and we're going to start things off with Equitas Health. At the end of March, the frontline workers at Equitas Health overwhelmingly, and what I mean by overwhelmingly is 96% ratified their first union contract. Boy, are they happy campers. We're talking a contract that includes a wage increase, a signing bonus, a binding grievance and arbitration process, a labor management committee. I mean, this was a win, a big win for the workers there. And Melissa's excited to talk about that. Also, mail-in voting underway right now at the Upper Arlington Public Library. They're expecting this will be their fourth union victory in Central Ohio Public Library Systems, despite a very active union busting campaign, and she'll talk about that. Educators Thriving, this is a really good, check this website out when you get a chance, educatorsthriving.org. This is an organization that brings research-based personal development to teachers and leaders in school systems, not just in the state of Ohio, but around the country. Their work helps leaders address stress and burnout by supporting teachers and facilitating well-being. And the American Federation of Teachers is a big partner in this. And what this is all about is gathering data. And they're going to start this, I believe, at the end of the school year and talk to teachers about the problems that they're encountering, the burnout. Many of them are leaving the profession because of the stress and the burnout. EducatorsThriving.org. Do check that out when you get an opportunity. And lastly, vouchers. Last year, 2023, the Ohio legislature, guided by an extremist supermajority, expanded private school voucher eligibility to cover every Ohio student, regardless of the quality of their local public school. You may recall, okay, so the school was not performing in your neighborhood. We're going to give you some money for your child to go to a private school. That's how this all started. Well, you know what? There's a lot of parents that have been sending their kids to private schools that are now getting taxpayer money. And what's happening? It's hurting the public schools. oh.aft.org is a website you want to go to. Our second guest on the show today is James Cahill. James is a vice president of the National Labor and Trust at Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield. He is the regional vice president of labor accounts, where he supports hardworking New Yorkers as part of the company's mission to improve the health of all workers, especially in New York. In that role, he oversees health care for New York's unions, ensuring access for the people that power the city that he says never sleeps. Well, he's right about that. We're going to zero in on Taft-Hartley funds. Now, Taft-Hartley funds our plans, trust funds, our plans established under Section 302 of the Taft-Hartley Act, which goes back to 1947. Each fund is formed as a result of a collective bargaining agreement, and these plans, you probably know this, but I have to, you know, share this with a lot of our new listeners, these plans are also referred to as multi-employer funds, Taft-Hartley funds, joint trusts, jointly trusted plans, ERISA trust funds, and labor management employee benefit funds. We're going to talk about all of that, why it's unique, some of the common themes nationally for Taft-Hartley funds relative to health and welfare, and what Jim sees changing in the future for those funds. I mean, he's going to put on his predictor's cap and just follow the trends of what's been happening in healthcare. And we've seen so many changes over the years, no doubt about that. So James Cahill will be joining us on behalf of Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield on the show today. And now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. The Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, unanimously held in favor of bakery delivery drivers, ruling that the drivers are in fact transportation workers exempted from mandatory arbitration by Section 1 of the Federal Arbitration Act. This is monumental because it's not too often that you get a labor-friendly ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. The case is Bissonnette versus LePage Bakeries, and they asked the court to interpret yet again the class of workers the Arbitration Act intended to exempt. The workers are delivery truck drivers for Flour Foods, the second largest producer and marketer of packaged bakery foods in the country. Flour Foods is the parent company of Wonder Bread and Dave's Killer Bread, among other brands. Well, in 2019, the delivery truck driver sued Flour Foods, alleging that the company violated state and federal wage laws. Flour Foods moved to compel arbitration. The company argued that the Arbitration Act exempts only workers in the transportation industry, not workers in other industries who happen to transport, load, or unload goods. Flour Foods, the company argued, is in the baking industry, thus their delivery drivers are not exempted by Section 1. Well, the court said no. They rejected the argument, suggesting that a reading of the act that defines the exemption on an industry-wide basis would be rather strange. So I'll take it. I'll take a ruling from the Supreme Court on that, especially when it's in favor for workers. UAW President Sean Fain joined Daimler truck workers. This was in North Carolina at their practice picket rallies yesterday, and that will continue today as contract talks covering 7,000 UAW members continue. The workers are demanding an agreement that reflects the record profits Daimler has garnered and includes the long overdue fair wages and working conditions that the workers say they deserve. That contract expires at midnight Friday, April 26th. The workers who build Freightliner trucks, Western Star trucks, and Thomas-built buses are facing declining real wages and job security, even as Daimler Truck tallies record profits and makes massive payouts to shareholders. Now, over the past 6 years, their profits have increased by 90%, while workers' buying power has fallen, according to the UAW, by 13%. By the way, the rally today with Fain comes weeks after 7,000 Daimler Truck North American workers voted 96% to authorize a strike if necessary. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Melissa Cropper on behalf of the Ohio Federation of Teachers coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans, and we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers, and we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
The Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council, consisting of 8 iron worker local unions in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan. We build the skylines and bridges along the Great Lakes. With more work than ever before, the Great Lakes District Council is actively searching out the next great iron worker. Whether it's building the next Intel plant or constructing a bridge to safely connect our great cities along the lake. So join the Iron Workers Great Lakes District Council today. Find out how and learn more about the council by visiting iwdistrictcouncil.com.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to Columbus, Ohio, and join one of our regulars, longtime supporter of America's Workforce. That would be Melissa Cropper, who serves as president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Website, real simple, oh.aft.org. And we're going to start off with some good news. If you've been listening to this show with Melissa, she loves to talk about organizing. And I'll tell you, we've got a win at Equitas Health at the end of March. Frontline workers overwhelmingly ratified their first union contract. Melissa, I'm going to let you pick it up from there. I know this was not easy. And last month, I remember, weren't they changing the CEO or something, and you wanted to get this done in a record amount of time? Is that right?
Well, I won't. You got a half right. We're getting a new CEO start at the beginning of April. Not a record amount of time, though. We worked in a year and a half on this. But when the new CEO was coming in, I think there's a doubling down on trying to get it finished before that new CEO started. So all of a sudden there was a rush to get it finished, which worked in our benefit. But this is when we worried. We've talked about this on the show a few times. I mean, Equitas was a really, really difficult election to win to start with. 12 locations across the state, and really difficult to organize. But during our whole contract campaign, our people on the bargaining team were just amazing, and they did an incredible job of continuing to reach out to members all along the way. And we actually had a much higher vote count for the ratification of this contract than we had for the election a year and a half ago. So it just goes to show how strong, you know, how hard our negotiating team worked, how much they reached out to other members along the way, and just built strength and solidarity before ever actually getting that contract. So very proud of these people and very excited. And you know, oftentimes you hear if it takes you longer than a year to get a first contract. You're either not going to get one or it's going to be a bad contract. But this is a really good contract. They got a signing bonus. They've got a binding grievance and arbitration process. They were able to get a labor management committee. Wow. One of their complaints is that they were never able to have direct access to the board. Now they've got direct access to the board of trustees. They got things in there that were important to them, like often they get exposed to going to homes where there might be bed bugs, so they end up bringing bed bugs home with them. So they got guaranteed that if they have bed bugs, they Equitas will pay for the removal of those bed bugs. They got leave to be able to volunteer at other organizations. I mean, it's just incredible the things that they were able to get into a first contract.
Well, it certainly cast a light on health workers, what they have to go through. And getting back to the record time was getting this done before the new CEO came in there, because you never know what that CEO is going to do. That's the important thing there. So thanks for clarifying that. That's my fault. It just sounded really good to get this done in time, because that first contract, and we talk about this so many times on the show, there's a lot of organizing wins that have happened. Amazon, for one, Staten Island. They still don't have a first contract in New York on that one. But congratulations on that. 96% voting in favor of that contract. Good stuff there. Let's move on to the Upper Arlington Public Library. I guess this is happening right now, mail-in voting. Can you give us some details on this, Melissa?
Happening right now. The ballots are out there. We're waiting for the results to come in. But we did a structure test right before going to an election, and had an overwhelming number of people vote in, publicly say that they were going to vote yes for the election. So we feel confident that we're going to win this election. We just have to go through the process. Unfortunately, because of delays with CERB and stuff, it's going to be like the middle of May before we actually get the election results. Like 2 weeks after the election ends before they actually do the ballot count. But we feel really good about this one. Again, this will be our fourth library system in Central Ohio that we've organized. And again, we're getting good contracts at these libraries. So very proud of the Upper Arlington workers also. Again, it took them a little longer than sometimes takes for them to go to an election. But they've really stepped up to the challenge and have done all the work they need to do to be successful in an election. And I expect that next time we talk, we'll be talking about how they won their election.
And Melissa, this is happening despite a lot of union busting. Can you maybe touch on that briefly for our listeners? Because I know this is very common in a lot of organizing campaigns.
Absolutely. Upper Arlington's a place where management found out before we were ready for them to know that we were working on organizing a union there, and they started their union busting. But particularly once we did go public with wanting to organize there, the director of the library made videos that she sent out to everybody, not just to members but also to the community, about why unions are bad and why they didn't need a union. We think there were some meetings that happened where workers were called in and told they had to watch these videos, et cetera. So, again, just constant pressure from the administration to not be a part of a union. But it actually, I think, made our people there stronger, because, like I said, we did a structure test right before filing for an election, and people are still saying, yes, they want to be part of a union, and they're ready to vote yes on this election.
And this could be the fourth union victory in Central Ohio's public library system. So we'll see what happens there. All right, Melissa, let's move on to Educators Thriving. And apparently this has to do with research-based personal development to teachers and leaders in school systems around the country. And I guess in one word, burnout. A lot of teachers, they are burned out because of so many things going on. And I think the pandemic cast a light on that. But why don't you explain what Educators Thriving is all about? Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. Again, this is a research-based personal development organization that has developed a survey around teacher wellness that they use across the country, or educator wellness, I should say, they use around the country. And then they have aligned some professional development to go along with that. They often work with districts. This isn't a union made survey. This is our union made group. This is a group that works with districts to try to help with the teacher retention problem and to identify where there are issues and how to deal with these issues. Now, AOT did work with them, and some of our members did work with them on the development of the survey. But again, it's very scientifically based and has a lot of credibility throughout the country. So we heard of, they had done some work in Cleveland, and again, Cleveland, both on the management side and on the labor side, were very, very pleased with the results. Now, when I say pleased with the results, I think the results were alarming with them, but they were pleased with the data that they got, that they were then able to make actionable and figure out how they work with educators to address their well-being. So after hearing about that, we decided that we wanted to take it to another level and really looking at this in two ways. First of all, we know that there are two things that teachers that we need to think about. One is, how do we help educators deal with the stress of the day-to-day work? What are some tools that they have in order to be able to deal with that? But then the other picture of this is, what do we need to do from either a policy level, at the state, local, et cetera, to alleviate some of the stress that educators are dealing with? So that's what I'm hoping to accomplish with this survey. We've got about 15 locals across the state who are going to take this survey, and then we're going to get together and analyze the results and see what can we do at a local level that will help educators deal with stress and pick up some personal habits they can do. But then what also are we picking up across the state that can be changed in policy that will help alleviate some of the stress? So when we're looking at results from urban, suburban, rural school districts across the state and see these commonalities, we will then take that data to the legislature and say, listen, this is what we're seeing across the state, and if you're serious about teacher retention and educator well-being, then we need to address some issues. And those are the issues that we're going to try to identify this summer.
So when you said this summer, you expect to have this data about when?
So we are beginning the survey right now in about, like I said, 10 to 15 districts. We're just getting it off the ground, and we hope to have that survey. We want to have that survey completed before the end of the school year. We think this is a great time to do it because teachers have been through don't want to do it at the beginning of the school year where hopes and expectations are high, but rather do it at a point in time where stress probably is high, and have those results by the end of the school year. And then we'll take the summer to analyze those results and look at all that data and have some focus groups to dig a little bit deeper. And then I'm going to say during the fall or leading into budget season, next General Assembly, start actually pushing out our policy agenda around it.
Gotcha.
Now, that's what we'll do at a state level. But again, each local that participates will also have the ability to get building level data within their district. And they can work with their district on, listen, there are some things we need to work on locally to address issues that are happening here locally. So again, it's kind of a twofold thing. We can get local action out of it and state action out of it also.
I like that website too, educatorsthriving.org. Those of you listening might want to check it out and see what they're doing. It's much needed, let me put it that way. Okay, Melissa, one more here, and this is a subject that really bothers me, and I know it bothers you. It's the vouchers in the state of Ohio. We're not alone either. I mean, a lot of states, especially down south, are doing the same thing. I know Alabama has really accelerated their voucher program. But we're talking about taking public money, and it's going into private institutions, and a lot of the parents already have their kids in private schools, and they're getting this taxpayer money. There's something really wrong with that. Where do we stand with this in the state of Ohio right now? It doesn't seem to be stopping, does it?
No. Now that there are universal vouchers in Ohio, the amount of money going to it has greatly expanded. We're on track to hit about $1 billion going to private education. Now, I say the amount of money being spent has expanded because we're now funding students who weren't funded before, who are already going to private schools. So that's the difference now. All these students who have been going to private schools for years without a voucher are now getting a voucher. And this is all, you know, what makes this really, really egregious is that we still have not fully funded our fair school funding formula. So sending $1 billion to private education when we still have not made a full commitment to funding our public schools where 90% of our students go. So yes, it's a horrible story that continues to get more horrible every year.
And sadly, a lot of this has to do, maybe all of it, due to gerrymandered districts. I mean, you've got a super majority here that is hell-bent on these vouchers, and we just can't seem to convince them otherwise. Well, we'll stay on this one. I thank you so much, Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. You hang in there, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Great, thank you. Bye-bye.
Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Once again, check out their website. Lots of good information there. oh.aft.org. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, James Cahill will be joining us. Jim is the vice president of National Labor and Trust at Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Founded in 1887, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters represents the employees responsible for tirelessly constructing and maintaining the national rail system in America. For more than a century, the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees has proven they have what it takes to protect its members and meet the ever-changing challenges of the rail industry. Today, the BMWED continues to fight for job security, fair wages, better benefits, and safer, more modern work environments. For more information, please visit BMWE.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to line number one. Welcome a newcomer to the show. His name is James Cahill. James is with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, and he serves as a vice president of the National Labor and Trust Division. And today we're going to talk about Taft-Hartley funds. What is so unique about them, what they are, and how they're helping so many people. Very important subject here that we really haven't delved into over the years. All right, let's go to our live line and welcome James to the show. James, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today. And I always do this in the first segment, especially with a newcomer, kind of find out how you got into the position that you're in today. Obviously, it sounds like you had some college experience and maybe a degree in finance. I don't know. Maybe you could just fill us in on how you got to be vice president of this giant company. Go ahead. Let's start there, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much. Really excited to be here. And you're pretty spot on. I attended Fairfield University in Connecticut, graduated there with a bachelor's degree. And ironically, you know, very different than a lot in the marketplace. My first job was what was then Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield, now Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, and actually started within their New York labor division. I started as an account management support person, did that for about a year or two, became an account executive. Later, after having some success and, you know, thankful to our labor clients in the New York area who played a big role in that success, and moved on to be the director of that division. So I ran labor for New York. And just in the past 2 years, I've been giving the national lead role over National Labor and Trust for Anthem for all 14 of the markets that we serve. That's a very short way of summing up a 20-year career, but all with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. Very happy to serve our labor and trust members across the country.
Well, from what I've been gathering, I hear it's a great company to be working for, and obviously there's a benefit of with the services that you provide. So let's get into that, and maybe you could give us a little bit of a history lesson here on Taft-Hartley Trust Funds, how they came about. And we have to go back to the year 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act, which is officially known as the Labor Management Relations Act of 1947. And from what I've been gathering, maybe you could fill in the blanks here, this was a response to what happened early on in Franklin Delano Roosevelt's administration. He was very union friendly. Some in Congress felt he went a little too far, and they made some changes to the National Labor Relations Act, and that's where Taft-Hartley came in. So I'm going to let you pick it up from there, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I mean, you know, obviously, even looking back all that time ago, it's legislation that still means so much for today, right? That allowed labor unions to grow and almost self-serve exactly what they do, which is really advocating for workers' rights. You know, any labor movement is always based in the concept of, you know, giving the worker the privileges that they deserve for performing the duties that they perform. So as you look through that legislation and that drive, you know, coming off an era where, you know, you had people working in the factories and the distribution type business for, you know, hours upon hours upon hours with no equitable wage, right? And, you know, unions were born off of really unfair labor practices. And as we kind of shift forward to the unbelievable growth that we've had in the union space and workers' rights over the years, I would say the union movement is stronger today than it ever was, and that's built on the heels of just some really great labor leaders, politicians, legislators over the years that have had that same commitment that we had all the way back in 1947 to say, hey, we want to protect our workers here. We want to make sure the workers have rights and they can make a fair and equitable wage at the same time have a good quality of life.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Taft-Hartley Trust Funds, I'm reading, now these were all established under Section 302 of the Taft-Hartley Act. Again, we're going back to 1947. Each fund, each one, is formed as a result of a collective bargaining agreement. And we know there's a lot of CBAs out there. So let's talk about that. What are some of the common themes that you're seeing for those funds, especially relative to health and welfare? Can we get into that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you stated it perfectly. Obviously, the union is going to collectively bargain with its employers. And the biggest part of that collective bargaining agreement for me is what is attributed within that CBA to health and welfare. Most commonly across the board, health and welfare consists of the medical benefits, the ancillary benefits like your vision and dental, your RX benefits, but also your pension as well. And, you know, as we, as healthcare becomes more and more expensive, as the market becomes more and more volatile, it's a huge part of the collective bargaining process now. And as I visit trust funds across the country, I think the goal of every collective bargaining agreement, which is sometimes difficult to do, is exactly the same. The unions are looking for ways to offer a health benefit plan that is at the pinnacle of healthcare. It's a plan that their members can be proud of, but all the time, at the same time, managing enough costs so that within that collective bargaining process, there's an ability to shift some money back into wages and back into that union member's pocket, as opposed to only collective bargain, only collectively bargaining for what is the increase in benefit spend.
Mm-hmm. Also, we should point out that Taft-Hartley trust funds have one very important common feature, and that is they're administered by boards of trustees on which labor and management are equally, and the key word here, equally represented. It's important that you get input from both sides here. Can you speak to that? I mean, that's a biggie, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the structure really does equate to a really good process, right? Because from you have the, in most cases, the union side that is representing, you know, the worker, right? And mm-hmm. the management mm-hmm. side that is representing the business or the multiple businesses, right? So what comes out of these trusts is really a collective effort to offer high-end health plans at efficient costs, right, but make sure that both the worker and the employer are heard in that conversation. It's a very unique environment. It does require a very unique skill set in order to manage, because a lot of times there's differing opinions on both sides. But at the same time, I'm really happy to watch as, you know, I see the bargaining process unfold and, you know, see both sides really willing to do what's right for both sides of the equation.
Yeah. It's not my way or the highway. You got equal input on both sides. Now, that being said, let's talk about the cost of healthcare. You know, we all know what's happened here over the last maybe 10, 20 years. It's been astronomical. How do you manage that? That's a very, very difficult task there, Mr. Cahill. Maybe you can give us some input on how you're navigating through all of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, we really partner with all of our clients, right? And in my 20 years in the industry, as healthcare, you know, costs have risen, I'm in awe of how ingrained the trustees, the fund management of unions are really digging into what's driving costs, how can we save money. One of the real unique things that we're doing at Anthem is really making sure we're as responsible as possible within our contracting. If you look at something like our New York plan is 96% self-insured, meaning that every contract that we negotiate with the hospital, the success or failure of that negotiation is really shifting that cost down onto, you know, the hardest working people in the city. And that those statistics vary from market to market. But at the end of the day, our motivation is really lowering the total cost of care. So we get very aggressive in our contracting, you know, trying to offset consolidation, technology advancements, everything that's really driving that cost. And I think where labor is really leading the way is bringing awareness to site of care cost differentials, meaning that there are certain services where you can have it done in a hospital setting, inpatient and an outpatient setting, or a professional setting, and labor is really driving to bring awareness to its members to say, hey, you know, you can go to a urgent care center instead of an emergency room. You know, you could have a minor surgery in the doctor's office as opposed to the outpatient center. And same service, same mortality rates. However, it's driving a differential of cost of sometimes 200 to 300% less.
Right, right. Oh, there's been tremendous advances in healthcare. And to your point, yeah, there's a lot of things that can be done to alleviate the cost of healthcare. It's good to know that you're monitoring that. James Cahill joining us on our live line today. He is the Vice President, National Labor and Trust for Anthem, Blue Cross, and Blue Shield. We'll continue. Lots more questions. We'll bring him forward to Jim right after this.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's L-I-U-N-A. .org.
Are you an experienced mechanical insulator looking to take your career to the next level? Insulators Local 50 in Central Ohio has steady work for a number of years. Insulators Local 50 offers a total wage and benefits package that can't be beat. It's not just the competitive wages. Local 50 also provides medical, vision, and dental insurance with no paycheck deductions for you and your family. Don't miss out on the chance to secure your future. Join us at Insulators Local 50. Earn great pay and the best benefits. Visit insulators50.com/AWF50 to fill out the online form, and a Local 50 representative will call to begin the process. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Ironworkers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Brotherhood of Maintenance of Way Employees Division of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. For more information, please visit bmwe.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This portion of the show brought to you by the International Union of Bricklayers and Allied Craft Workers. For more information, please visit bacweb.org. America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. And remember this. I forgot to mention this. We did this so much last year, and it really, really took off. If you like a show, and I know you like America's Workforce, we talk about working-class issues Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of every week, 52 weeks a year. So if you like a show, share that show, because we count the downloads, and our sponsors like to know how we're doing. And you know what? We're doing pretty darn well. Last year, top 1% of all podcasts in America. Yeah. And we started the year with about maybe the top 15%. So we're growing the show thanks to you as a listener of America's Workforce. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, where you could find more at ulagency.org. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin James Cahill. James is a vice president of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, our National Labor and Trust Division. And we've been talking about Taft-Hartley funds, zeroing in on that. And I want to talk about Anthem's relationship to labor. You know, There's a lot of players out there. But Anthem has done a great job dealing with unions. Jim, can you speak to that? And I guess there's some history in that as well.
Yeah, I think, thank you. I think there's a long history, you know, in terms of Anthem and our labor relationship. Most notably, you know, right now, across our 14 market footprint, we have about a 70% market share of labor unions. That's in the private sector, excludes public sector labor. But about 70%. So probably the first thing from an Anthem perspective is, you know, our labor business is extremely, extremely important to us. And we make sure that we're always treating it as such. The second thing is we've actually built a division solely dedicated to only the national labor and trust space. That's the team I'm just proud to lead every day. And a lot of those associates come with long tenures. Some of them been up at the company for 30 to 40 years and just have a lot of experience in dealing with our labor trust, the funds, how they manage, and have a deep understanding of how to manage a labor client. I think that's what really sets us apart. And kind of the second phase of that is we truly understand that unlike corporate insurance purchasing, you can't save money just by shifting the money back onto the union member, right? So you can't just raise deductibles. You can't do the high deductible plans, you know, that corporate America sees. So you have to find new and innovative ways to save money without shifting that cost. And that's been a major focus of ours over the last couple of years, making sure that we're aware of that nuance and that we're executing on that strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when it comes to the funds, that's where the labor management cooperation comes in to alleviate those costs. I did not realize that your density is 70% in the private sector when unions are in the private sector, not the public sector, but that's a lot. That's almost 3 out of 4. So congratulations on that. I know it took a lot of hard work to get there. Let's get back to the Taft-Hartley funds and what's so unique about them when it comes to purchasing insurance. Can you explain that part for our listeners, Jim?
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of unique things. Obviously, what's most unique is, you know, going back into the collective bargaining conversation, most collective bargaining agreements are run off of 3-year terms, right? So the trustees that are putting together these medical benefit plans have to really be able to account for 3 years worth of cost, right? So if you think on the commercial side, you're really doing a 1-year budget. If the budget goes over, you just change the budget, right? A Taft-Hartley union in most cases has to build a plan and has to build a collective bargaining agreement that can not only fund the cost of the plan, but also build reserves so that they can endure the rainy day, so to speak, or the bad turn in utilization. That's the first most unique, is that you're really on a 3-year run rate. The second is, you know, I think different than most insurance, you know, the member, meaning the union member, is at the centerpiece of every decision. You know, we just talked about cost shifting being a non-starter. But the member experience is actually super important to the trustees, both on the management and the labor side. So, you know, making sure that you have your customer service area buttoned up, that your technology and your app technology that you're pushing down to the membership, and making sure that you're providing a simple benefit plan that the member can understand, are all the pillars of doing good business within labor in the healthcare space.
All right, one more question here for you, Jim. I know you got a lot on your plate today, but I really appreciate it. I'm learning a lot. I know our listeners are learning a lot. And I guess you have to get your crystal ball out here for this next question. What do you see changing in the future for Taft-Hartley funds? I mean, you mentioned like the 3-year deal. You never know what's going to happen. You got year one, year two, you're doing well. Then all of a sudden in the third year, something changes. And then you got to adjust for those changes. And you've been doing this for a couple of decades now. I would imagine you got an educated answer on what you see down the road, because you know every day there's some kind of change. But what do you see? What's your gut telling you here?
So I think for the most part, you know, some of the trends that we've been seeing specifically in National Labor and Trust is, and this started on the RX side of the house, but we're seeing certain consolidations. One of the things that unions have is the gift of economies of scale, right? And while most unions purchase on a local level, they all roll up, for the most part, to a bigger national level. So if you take somebody like the Carpenters, right, there's local unions all over the 50 states in Canada, and then you have the international. And probably the biggest trend that I'm seeing is unions really figuring out how to expand their economies of scale to reduce risk when it comes to health insurance. So while a local union might have 10,000 members, that's a big union. You have economies of scale there. An international might have 400,000. Right. And what's unique about that, especially in not so much in the medical space, but in the RX space, because of the way PBMs price their products, right? The RX space is currently the only space where actually the unit cost of the drug you're purchasing changes with economies of scale. So to better explain that, you know, your Humira pen might be, and I'm making up these numbers, might be $600 if you're a group of 100, and if you're a group of 200,000, that cost might drop to $450 because of the way that it's purchased. Much right, different right. than on the healthcare side. You know, you're going to pay your contracted rate per surgery based on the network. So economies of scale on the medical side really only give you exactly, you offset risk, right? You're expanding the pool. But I think the biggest thing over the next couple of years is, you know, as our national, international unions get together and talk about, I think they're thinking about how they leverage those economies of scale to further reduce cost and pressure on that local union.
One more question here. I apologize. I said the other one was going to be your last, but generics. And I noticed this under my plan because I'm on, for cholesterol lowering, Lipitor, and it's called Avastatin now, and then Prilosec is Omeprazole. And I see a lot of plans going in that direction. And you got to be cautious, too, depending on what kind of ailment you have. You got to go with the regular medicine. But the generics have, I would imagine, obviously alleviated some of the costs over the years. You see that trend continuing, Jim?
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest shifts, especially in the labor space. I think the commercial environment has been, you know, generic-only type drug cards, you know. But there is a big shift between generics and you'll hear a lot of the term biosimilars, right? Almost the same thing as a generic medication. But as the patents expire on these drugs, they're able to be made with the same efficacy as the brand name, just at a much lower cost, right? There is always that conflict, right? And there are different variations, but I think the industry as a whole, and our PBM Carelon is spending a lot of time making sure that we're doing the research to ensure that there's no downstream impact to the consumer in using that generic drug, and you save costs for exactly the same service. So that is a great trend in the marketplace, I think. And what we're seeing is, I also believe that you're going to continue to see the gap between a brand name drug and a generic drug continue to widen. So I think there's going to be a large shift to generic equivalents when available, right? You know, on a go-forward basis.
Very good. We'll leave it on that note. James Cahill, Vice President, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield's National Labor and Trust Division. Boy, I tell you, you're great. I really appreciated the conversation. Let's do this down the road, maybe get an update. I know, like I said, everything's always changing here. So let's keep in touch on this and more, okay?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Really enjoyed the time.
And that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the American Federation of Government Employees and the Teamsters boycott at Molson Coors. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.